You know, the science of Alzheimer's disease is advancing every day. There are new treatments being offered and researched, and there is some reason for hope. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our guest today, Sanjay Asthana, is the Associate Dean for Gerontology, head of the UW Division of Geriatrics and Gerontology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He also serves as director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. So we're going to be talking with him about Alzheimer's disease today, and I hope you'll join in. If you have questions about the disease, maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Certainly love to hear from you. And Dr. Sanjay Asthana, welcome back. Great to have you with us again.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. What are you guys all about?
Yes. So this is a center that is funded by the federal government, by the NIH, and is one of the 30 such centers in the United States that focus research in trying to find new ways how to diagnose and treat the disease, and also how to better understand what causes this disease. So here in Wisconsin, it is a very unique center in the sense that it is based in geriatrics. So it's the only geriatric-based center in the United States. So besides doing all kinds of research and understanding what causes Alzheimer's, how it presents in different ways in people who have the disease, what are some emerging new treatments, we also focus a lot on patient care, on care of caregivers, because they have a lot of stress and issues. So we really do some research across the full spectrum of the disease, right from molecule all the way to bedside, to the curbside, to the community.
Yeah.
So that's very, very unique.
Yeah, I think it is. And your center, along with the medical college, received a, what was it, $5.5 million grant last year?
Yeah, we did. And it is based, focus on finding new brain imaging techniques to diagnose the disease. When someone has no symptoms, I think it's very important to understand the disease. When person has not had no symptoms, but actually we know that the disease has started in that person about 20 or 30 years earlier.
Boy.
So during that phase, we call pre-symptomatic phase, we're trying to find how we can diagnose people and stop the disease right then so that they have no symptoms.
Yeah. So the imaging, that plays an important role then in Alzheimer's research?
Yeah, it's a very important role, both in the diagnosis for the disease and also in finding out people who have no symptoms, but we know that the disease has started because either they had very strong family history of the disease or they have some risk genes in them. So these scans, a lot of advanced have taken place, and Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin is world-renowned in brain imaging research for many, many years. So we are using these new techniques here in imaging some abnormal proteins in the brain that we know collect over time and cause the disease. So these are called amyloid and the tau proteins, and we use PET brain scan techniques to image them. So now here in Wisconsin, we can actually, at University of Wisconsin, image these proteins in people who may be either at increased risk for the disease or have the disease. And it's one of the very new ways to pick up the disease.
Now, Jill posted up on our Facebook page an image, a brain image. What does a brain, I guess this is a person's brain with Alzheimer's.
Yeah, that is true. And this is, again, called the PET amyloid scan. So it is amyloid. So you see that there are red and yellow areas all around the different parts of the brain, the front of the brain, the side of the brain. And this tells me that this person has amyloid protein deposition in their brain. Now, it's important to know that some people with the protein may have no symptoms, but others, more people will have symptoms if this we detect this protein in the brain. But some can fight it and actually be disease-free, although the protein is in their brain. So we're trying to find how these people fight and protect themselves against the disease, although the disease pathology exists.
What do we know about what causes the disease or what causes these proteins to be present.
Yes. So there are. This is a very important question. So we really better understand how this happens. So this protein, the amyloid protein I mentioned, actually is a normal protein in everyone's brain. And those who have Alzheimer's, it is processed in an abnormal way by certain enzymes in the brain. These are the proteins. These are the enzymes that break up the protein. So they process this protein in an abnormal fashion in those who develop the disease. And so there's a toxic form of this protein that accumulates over decades in the brain and then eventually causes the symptom.
Yeah. You know, Karen in Neenah has a question, I think, that relates to all this. So let's go there. Karen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
And what's on your mind today?
I have a couple questions. Are there different types of Alzheimer's, such as, say, an individual who may receive multiple blows to their head during their lifetime, as well as individuals who consume a high amount of alcohol? Are there different definitions or different names for multiple types of Alzheimer's and their causes, or is there just a sort of accumulated effect of different risk factors that would cause one to have Alzheimer's? Is there just one Alzheimer's disease or multiple Alzheimer's diseases?
Right. Yeah, well, thanks for this question. It's a very important question, actually. So Alzheimer's, I can explain this way. Alzheimer's is one of the many diseases that causes dementia. So what is dementia? Dementia is anyone who has memory complaints severe enough that they interfere with their day-to-day living activities has dementia. So Alzheimer's is the most common cause of dementia. Now, there are other diseases that can cause dementia, and you mentioned one of them, repeated trauma to the brain. Now, repeated trauma to the brain, known as traumatic brain injury, can cause dementia of its own kind, or it can increase risk for Alzheimer's. So traumatic brain injury is another cause for dementia. The third one is Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease can cause dementia. Mm. And then we have other forms of dementia, other diseases that can cause dementia. But Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia. Now, usually it exists in two forms. One, when it affects people who are young. So we call early onset Alzheimer's disease. And these are people who are usually younger than 60, in their 50s, even in late 40s, and they are the ones who have inherited the real gene from their family. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, only 2 or 3% of patients with Alzheimer's have this lethal, aggressive form of the disease called early onset Alzheimer's. But majority have so-called late onset Alzheimer's, where it occurs after 60s, and usually in 70s and 80s.
Mm, there we go. Thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Brian in Fond du Lac has a question as well, so let's go there. Brian, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Sure. And you may have answered a little bit of this. I was wondering about the hereditary component of this. My wife's parents had both been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and within the last year, her sister has been diagnosed, and her sister is in her mid-60s, and now my wife is in her mid-50s, so now my wife is terrified that she's next in line for this.
Yeah, well, thanks for this. Is again a very important question. So, heredity and genetics plays a very important role in Alzheimer's disease. What we know that if someone had one of their parent or have a very strong family history of Alzheimer's, then they are at a slightly high risk of getting the disease, about 30 or 40% higher risk. If someone has, for example, my own father had Alzheimer's. He unfortunately passed away with the disease. So I have about 30%, 40% increased risk of getting the disease. But it's not by any means 100%. So even if someone has a strong family history, there are ways we can actually reduce the risk of getting the disease. And many of you have heard those ways, and we'll probably discuss later in the shows. But yes, heredity plays an important role in Alzheimer's disease.
Can she be tested for the gene?
Can she be tested for the gene?
So the answer is yes. So there are a number of genes that have been identified to be associated with Alzheimer's. The genes can be tested, but usually as a part of a research study. And there are some strict regulations that control sharing the results of such tests. And there are very, very viable reasons why there are strict federal controls. But yes, the genes can be tested. The answer is yes.
Okay,
and it's a simple blood test. It's a blood test.
Hmm. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. I'd certainly love to hear from you. And maybe we should talk, before we go back to the phones, a little bit about some of those things that we can do, personally do to help slow or inhibit Alzheimer's.
Yes, very much so. So, as I mentioned, we are learning so much about the disease from research and research going around, around the world, and certainly in Wisconsin, it's very, very prominent. We have learned that a few things can help us reduce our risk of getting Alzheimer's disease while we are trying to find a very effective treatment and one day a cure. And those measures include exercise. You probably heard about this many times. We all know exercise is good for heart, it's good for diabetes, but it is also very good for the brain. And now there are a number of studies have come from human trials that exercise, regular exercise, 30 minutes a day, can reduce one's risk for getting Alzheimer's by 40%. And that is a very significant reduction just by merely doing 30 minutes a day of exercise. The other way we can control the risk is by treating diseases like heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure. These diseases we call as vascular diseases, if they're not controlled well, they can significantly increase the risk for Alzheimer's disease, especially if you get it in your midlife, say in your 50s or 60s. So that is time really to go to your doctor and get them very well controlled because they are very effective treatments. If you don't, then it increases the risk for Alzheimer's disease. And then healthy lifestyle, healthy diet. There's some evidence coming in that some kinds of diet may reduce the risk. These are not definitive evidence, but there's some early evidence coming in. So healthy lifestyle, healthy diet, treatment of vascular diseases, and regular exercise. I think these are very important things.
Let's turn to Maddie and De Pere next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Are the cases of Alzheimer's becoming more and more numerous? And also, does it have something to do with our modern diet? Like I spoke to a naturopathic doctor who said that our food is so totally different than it was 100 years ago. And does it have anything to do with that? And also, I'm interested in the screening that you're talking about.
Absolutely. These are all, again, very important things. So in terms of your first question, is Alzheimer's really increasing in number? We don't think that's the case. I think what is happening is more and more people are coming to medical attention because we are learning about the disease, we are worried about the disease, and people are coming to going to their doctors and specialized centers and want to make sure that they don't have Alzheimer's. So they're coming to medical attention. We are diagnosing more people with the disease. It is well known that as we all get older, our risk for getting Alzheimer's increases. So, for example, around only 2 or 3% of people around the age of 65 have Alzheimer's, but about 40% around the age of 85 have Alzheimer's.
Mm.
So no matter what our race or ethnicity is, as we all get older, that risk increases. So the number will increase over time as the population ages. But I think more people are coming to medical attention. Now, your question about diet, as I mentioned earlier, it seems that there are certain kinds of diet, although the evidence is preliminary and not definitive, something like Mediterranean diet. It's written about quite a bit that it may be protective. Other thing is diets high in vitamin E, like green leafy vegetable or nuts, are shown to have some beneficial effects. Are there diets that we eat that increase the risk? I think in general, a fatty diet, a diet that really is rich in lipids and cholesterol, cholesterol and things like those, the bad fat, so-called bad fat, I think they can increase the risk because they cause vascular diseases and worsen heart disease and diabetes. So it's an indirect evidence that certain diets can increase the risk. But in general, healthy lifestyle and diet is very beneficial in reducing your risk for the disease.
Mm-hmm. And screening, I think she asked about screening.
So screening is a controversial area in Alzheimer's. We, as of yet, don't have a magic screening or a single diagnostic test for the disease. So we have to do a number of things to screen and diagnose. But in general, the recommendation is not to do mass screening for Alzheimer's disease. But if someone has a strong family history, then I think they should go to the doctor. And we can do certain things to find out if there's an increased risk for the disease in that person. But generally, we don't recommend screening in someone who's asymptomatic and has normal life.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Sanjay Asthana, Associate Dean for Gerontology, heads the UW Division of Geriatrics and Gerontology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, we'll continue to talk about the complexities of the brain, but focus on tumors and cancer. Right now, taking a look at Alzheimer's and research with Dr. Sanjay Asthana from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have him along once again. Let's turn to some other callers. By the way, there is an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. In the meantime, let's talk to Todd in Eau Claire. Todd, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. I had a quick question about with the legalization of cannabis for medical reasons nowadays. Does cannabis increase the risk for early onset Alzheimer's?
Todd, that's, I suppose, a very timely question. What I can tell you from research perspective, there is no hard evidence that is the case. However, I can mention, it's a kind of a drug that is abused commonly, that alcohol, there is evidence that excessive intake of alcohol can be detrimental to the brain in general and can cause dementia. So there's proof about alcohol, but not about cannabis.
All right. Thank you for calling. On to Mary in Wauwatosa. Mary, hello to you.
Hello. Doctor, I was wondering if you had heard of the research work of Dr. Dale Bredesen in Southern California. He suggests that 5 lifestyle changes and no drug prescriptions can even reverse Alzheimer's, and he had a study with 10 individuals where he proved that 9 out of the 10 of them did improve based on tests of the brain and also, I believe, some MRI.
Yes, thank you, Mary. So again, I think through your question, you are really highlighting an important thing, which is lifestyle and Alzheimer's disease. And there are a number of studies that have been done to show this. And really, there is convincing evidence that if we change our lifestyle in terms of exercise, healthy diet, and stress reduction, things like those that we all know well, then the risk for Alzheimer's is significantly reduced. So the study you mentioned is just one of the many studies that are showing that indeed that is the case. So, yes, I highly recommend healthy lifestyle because it's really very good for Alzheimer's.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Mary Ann in Oshkosh up next. Let's go there. Mary Ann, hello.
Hello. My husband's been diagnosed with mild cognitive disorder. I'm wondering, is that going to lead to Alzheimer's? He's in his mid-80s, and this is just within the last 2 years.
Yes.
And it seems he's getting more forgetful and forgetting things, and he gets very upset with himself then, and that adds to the confusion and to his being unhappy. So is there anything I can hope for or do?
Yes. Again, Mary, this is a very important question. There's a condition called mild cognitive impairment, or MCI, which is quite commonly being diagnosed. And it's seen in about 30% people who are in their old age range, you know, kind of 70 and older. What this is that we think it is the earlier stage of dementia. Many people with this diagnosis called MCI, mild cognitive impairment, over time will likely progress to Alzheimer's. On average, about 10 or 12% people each year with the diagnosis of MCI will convert to Alzheimer's. Having said that, there's also evidence that about 20%, one in five people with MCI diagnosis may revert back to normal. So every person with this diagnosis doesn't develop Alzheimer's, but the risk is increased. So with this diagnosis, there are no approved medications for this diagnosis. However, again, in response to your question, I think if he's able to exercise regularly and do all the good things we talked about many times, the healthy lifestyle and exercise, he is going to reduce his risk for Alzheimer's. And if he has any of the vascular diseases like heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, get them well controlled, because that is also going to delay his progression.
Mm-hmm. So he needs to get out for hopefully a 30-minute walk a day.
Yeah. We try.
Yeah. Well, good. Good, Marianne.
You're doing all the right things.
Thank you. It gives me hope and gives him hope.
Yeah, there's a lot of hope, Mary, nowadays in these things. And I think everything we've talked about here today on the show, if it is followed, you will see some beneficial effects.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And go with him on those walks because it'll be good for you too, Marianne. Thank you very much for calling. Richard in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Richard. Thanks.
Hi.
For calling.
Hi, thanks for the show. Yes, I had heard something sometime back that was kind of interesting in relation to cholesterol and its part that it plays in our brain, particularly in our gray matter, and I think more particularly in the lining of the nerve ends. And this person was speaking pointed to a correlation between the emphasis on a low cholesterol diet and the increases of the dementias and Alzheimer's and so on and so forth. So I'm curious what sort of research or what you know about that. Thanks very much and appreciate the show.
Oh, absolutely. Richard, you are bringing attention to an important, very basic component of our brain, and that is cholesterol. So in fact, cholesterol is a part of cell membrane. So every cell in our body, and you know, the billions of cells in our body, has cholesterol. So it is an important part of the membrane that surrounds each cell and plays an important role in the function of the cell. So cholesterol is very important. Yes, there is quite a bit of evidence that high cholesterol, high lipids, and things like those will increase the risk for Alzheimer's disease, and diet is a major source of cholesterol and lipid. So it does play a very important role in Alzheimer's disease, and in general, it is very important for our life because it's an important part of each cell, and including brain cells. So it is a very important area that we are working on, and the field is looking at, and trying to find new ways to improve the cell function, the cell membrane function, and also controlling lipids and cholesterol for the disease.
So is it the high cholesterol or the low cholesterol?
It is the high cholesterol. It's the high cholesterol. You know, cholesterol is two kinds, the good one and the bad one. The good one is important. But for heart disease, we know it's not known as HDL. It is the bad one, the LDL, which we all can get measured, and that probably plays a role in Alzheimer's pathology.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Barbara in Middleton, let's turn to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have been listening to your show, and I think that there might be a little confusion with Alzheimer's diagnosis and dementia diagnosis, and people thinking that they are the same thing and not separate diseases. As I understand, Alzheimer's has to be diagnosed after the patient has deceased. You don't know up until that moment whether the person has dementia or Alzheimer's, which once again is part of the dementia family of neurological diseases in the brain.
Yes, Barbara, that's very correct. So as we talked earlier, so dementia is a generic term we give to anyone who has memory symptoms that are severe enough that they cannot perform their day-to-day living activities and cannot do their job and things like those. So anyone with those impairments is known to have dementia. And many diseases cause dementia, so Alzheimer's is the most common cause for dementia. You are correct that Alzheimer's, the definitive diagnosis of Alzheimer's is only made after death on autopsy. But while the person is living, in fact, we now have come very far in making a diagnosis, and the odds of making a correct diagnosis when the person is living now can be as high as 90 or 95%,
wow.
And especially at specialized centers. So when someone is alive, we can be pretty sure about the diagnosis, but the definitive diagnosis is only made on brain autopsy.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join in as well as we visit with Dr. Sanjay Asthana of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Let's turn to Bob in Oshkosh next. Bob, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. I get kind of emotional about this. My mother's been battling this disease problem for about, a year and a half. Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
My question for you is, I'm going to try to keep my composure here. She's currently living alone, okay? I stay with her. When I come in, when I walk in, she'll be in a demented state, okay? Well, she'll look at me and she'll say, well, I didn't know this was going to happen, and I didn't know, the whole thing. I mean, where am I? Why do I exist? My question for the doctor is, when she's in this demented state, and I can interact with her and mentally stimulate her, she'll come back out of it, probably in about 45 minutes. Okay?
Okay.
If she goes, all right, like so many other things, like so many other, whatever you want to call it, a gambling addiction or whatever, she goes into this demented state, she keeps going further and further away. Does it do more damage? Do they know? You follow what I'm saying? Because without mental stimulation, she falls behind, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Thanks, Bob. You are drawing attention to an important thing about the disease that requires special attention. But first and foremost, I'm really sorry, and I understand what you're going through, because there are millions of people like yourself. In the United States right now, we think about 5.3 million people have this disease. So you can imagine how many family members are involved, and the stress of caring for someone with Alzheimer's is very substantial. So I really appreciate what you're going through. And I think your question really brings attention to the fact that no matter how advanced the disease is, every person with Alzheimer's need to be a part of activities around them. The worst thing we can do is to isolate them, because they don't understand, they cannot talk. And if they are kept out of the usual activities, that will make them worse, and it gets difficult to manage them. Very often they develop depression along with dementia or Alzheimer's. So it is important to keep her involved, to keep her a part of all the social activities that you do or your family does. And that is a great stimulation. I would never recommend a medication to stimulate her. Sometimes those medications are used, but usually people like me don't use them because they have a lot of side effects. But the best thing to do is to keep her involved in your family activities and talk to her, although she may not understand, but she actually is appreciating what you're doing, and I think that'll be very helpful for her.
Yeah.
Well, she's often told me, she says, I wish you would have told me how bad I am.
Yes, I understand. And, sometimes it's difficult for them to understand their deficits, and insight into the disease goes away as the disease advances. But just make her a part of it and continue to converse and get involved and stay involved. I think that's really going to help her.
Yeah.
It'll be good for you as well.
Yeah.
So, So in other words, it doesn't really make it any worse.
No, it does not. No. In fact, it's very important to keep them involved.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling, Bob. Appreciate it. Lauren from southern Wisconsin has twin daughters with a form of Down syndrome who are still toddlers. She knows Alzheimer's is extremely common for people with Down syndrome later in life. She also knows they also offer important insight into understanding the disease, and would like to hear about what people with Down syndrome have given to the world of understanding Alzheimer's.
Wow, yeah, that is such a critical area here. It is very correct that people with Down syndrome are at a very high risk of getting Alzheimer's pathology in their brain and the symptoms. And majority of patients with Down syndrome who live into their 50s and 60s, majority, if not all, will show some changes of Alzheimer's. The contribution of people with Alzheimer's, with Down syndrome, to the field of Alzheimer's research is absolutely substantial. It is significant. We have learned a lot about Alzheimer's from people with Down syndrome because they both share the same chromosome, which has the genetic defect. So in Down syndrome, there is overexpression of the protein that causes Alzheimer's. And there's a close connection between the two diseases. We have learned major things by investigating Down syndrome as it relates to Alzheimer's.
Thank you so much for sending us that note. I appreciate it. David and Slinger, we turn to you next. Hi, David.
Yes, hi. I was originally going to just talk about pseudo-dementias and making sure that people were evaluated for things that can look like dementia, but also those things can make dementia worse, like depression, chronic pain, lots of different conditions, problems with vision, hearing. But the lady just talked about Down syndrome, and it happens to be I run the Down syndrome clinic in Milwaukee, and a lot of people with Down syndrome will come in with the diagnosis of dementia when, in fact, many times they have a kind of a pseudo-dementia, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Yes.
So just make sure that everything else is clicking before you make the diagnosis, and also once they have the diagnosis so they can function at a higher level. It's just a comment.
Yeah. Yes, David, thanks for bringing it up. I think you and I know this is a very important thing. As you mentioned, many people are diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's, but in fact they don't have that disease. What they have are these completely treatable conditions, and you mentioned depression. Depression, as we all know, is very common as we get older, and the most common symptom of depression in old age is memory problems. So many of these patients go to the doctors, I cannot remember, I cannot do my daily living activities, and they're diagnosed to have dementia. In fact, they have a completely treatable condition like depression, and also underactivity of thyroid gland and many other conditions and medications can mimic dementia, and that is known as pseudo-dementia. It's very important you get evaluated by a doctor or a neurologist or a geriatrician to make sure that you don't have a treatable condition which is presenting like dementia.
Yeah. Thanks so much, David, for calling. Appreciate it. And thanks for the work you do as well. Before we go back to the phones, UW is hosting a national summit on aging, the aging brain and dementia. Could you tell us about that?
Yes. Thank you, Larry, for pointing this out. So on April 18th and 19th, we are hosting an international conference on the aging brain and dementia. And our hope is to continue to hold these summits every year, every 2 years, and learn new things as the field advances to enhance research in dementia and aging-related diseases, other diseases across the UW campus by bringing authorities from all over the world, locally and within the country, understand what is the latest, and then together plan future studies so that collectively we can win diseases like Alzheimer's and many other age-related diseases. It's an inaugural summit. We are very excited, and we have speakers coming from all over the world.
Wow, excellent. Well, now let's turn to Leah in Marinette. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for your show and for taking my call. The doctor mentioned the importance of a healthy diet, and particularly mentioned low fat and cholesterol. But I've been reading more and more recently about sort of the dangers of refined sugars and refined flour, carbohydrates. And I wondered if you might mention that or weigh in on his opinion on that.
Yes, sugar. Thanks for mentioning this. You know, we know that refined sugars and high carb and those kind of diets can lead to obesity. I mean, that's one of the most common causes of obesity in the United States. And there's some evidence, actually quite a bit of evidence, that obesity increases risk for Alzheimer's disease. And there are various ways that that happens. So the kind of diet you mentioned, again, refined sugars and things like those actually do increase obesity, which can increase the risk for Alzheimer's disease. So there is a link, and we should control those things well in our diet and also look after our weight well.
Well, thank you so much. Jeannie in Slinger, your turn next. Let's go there. Hi, Jeannie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My mother dealt with Alzheimer's for about 5 years, and about a month after my father passed, she decided she was going to starve herself to death. And she asked if I would stay with her. And I thought, well, this will last about 15 minutes. That's about as long as her memory would last. But she proceeded to do that. And about 3 days later, she was as clear as could be and said nothing out of the ordinary for about the last 2 days before she went into a coma. So it made me think, is it possible that a ketogenic diet could make a real difference?
You know, that's an area we are trying to investigate more. There is some evidence that as the disease progresses, there is a shift in metabolism in the cells, and the substrate which is used for energy production later on is ketone. So that's the reason ketogenic diet. There's some discussion in literature and around the around the web that ketogenic diets could be useful. In terms of research, there's no such clinical trial yet to show that in human beings. So there's no evidence right now that is the case, but at a more basic level, a ketogenic diet is being looked at whether it will have any beneficial effects for the disease. At the present time, there is no evidence, and I would not recommend anything like that, because it can have its own adverse effects as well.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling. And here we are, Dr. Asthana, about out of time, but you're kind of an optimistic guy, and you're... You feel that we've made a lot of progress, and yes, and we will continue to make progress.
Absolutely, I have no doubt that. And in fact, this optimism is based on decades of accumulating research and world class research, really. And we are understanding a lot more about the disease, what causes it, what are the potential ways to diagnose the disease when someone has no symptoms, new treatments. There's a lot of research going on in the United States and around the world. And with the increasing knowledge, I have no doubt that we will one day find a very effective treatment, and cure is quite possible for Alzheimer's. No one can predict when, but the field has advanced so far by medical research. There are no shortcuts to medical research. We really need to support that. We will reach there, and I am very optimistic about this.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And you'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
I would love to. Thanks for having me. It's great to be on your show.
Dr. Sanjay Asthana, Associate Dean for Gerontology, heads the UW Division of Geriatrics and Gerontology at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And he also serves as Director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Great guy, and we will have him back, and we certainly will be talking with him again. We're not straying away from the brain, though. We're coming up next. We're going to be talking about brain tumors and brain cancer with our next guest, Dr. John Kuo, here on the Ideas Network.